CheersCast is part of the Fire & Water Podcast Network.
You spent your entire vacation at the airport?
Oh, yeah. You know, I mean, at first I felt terrible about missing my flight, but then I started talking to this really nice guy, and it turned out he's from India. Can you imagine that? I'm from Indiana, and he's from India? We laughed about that for hours. At least I think that's what he was laughing at.
Hello and welcome back to CheersCast, the podcast where everybody knows your name. I'm your host, Ryan Daly, and with me this time is returning guest from Mr. K's Super Show, Chris Karam. Welcome back, Chris.
Thanks for having me, Ryan. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you back. It's a lot of fun. We're going to be talking about a great episode here. As always, I mean, they're all great. Who am I kidding? Right. That's the reason I'm doing this show. So, Season 7, Episode 16, The Crane Makers. This one is written by Fief Sutton, directed by Andy Ackerman. So taking a little bit of a break, not a James Burrows episode. The original air date for this one was Thursday, March 2nd, 1989. Lilith's pregnancy has had a radical effect on her personality, causing her to embrace her womanhood, pending motherhood, the miracle and glory of life and rejuvenation. And it embarrasses Frasier. After publicly reprimanding her, Frasier feels terrible. But once Lilith gives him the chance to hear his unborn child's heartbeat for the first time, he falls in line with her extreme personality change. With parenthood upending their worldview, the Cranes decide to forsake urban civilization and relocate to the wilderness, building a home of their own and surviving off the land. Sam pleads with them to rethink this rash decision, finally convincing them to try it for 1 week before quitting their jobs. Frasier and Lilith go to a small cabin in rural Maine, but they don't last long. Unable to start a fire and missing the food at their favorite upscale Boston restaurant, they quickly abandon their new attitudes and retreat to the comfort of modernity. Meanwhile, Rebecca forces Woody to take a vacation, but he misses his flight and spends the entire week at the airport, which still turns out to be the best vacation of his life. All right, Chris, what did you think of The Crane Makers?
Well, I have to say, I had forgotten about this episode. It had been a while since I'd seen it. And the first thing I want to say off the top is that B.B. Newirth is a treasure.
Yeah, not to spoil who my MVP is, but I agree.
Probably me too. She is just amazing. I mean, she added so much to the show. She's not a late addition. She was kind of like a mid-period addition. I think she came in, what, season 5, as I recall?
Her first appearance is in season 4, I believe.
Okay.
But then she comes back, and yeah.
So she was there for the end of the Sam and Diane era, and then she's, but she's on full force for this era, the Kirstie Alley era, which began last season. And just the interaction between her and Kelsey Grammer as Frasier is amazing. Those two added so much to this show, and it's really great to see a show that's kind of based around their characters and the interaction. It's amazing.
I wonder how much of it was planned or just sort of serendipitous, but obviously at the end of season 5, when we have the severing of the Sam and Diane relationship, because obviously Shelley's leaving the show, we introduce a new lead character with Kirstie Alley, who is going to be the love foil for Sam, but they're resetting it. So they decide to spend a greater time getting them together, or a greater amount of time getting them together. It's not going to be this instant romance. It's going to be a pursuit that's going to last several seasons in this case. So in doing that, like, they substituted two other relationships to kind of have the firm entrenched couples. One was Carla and Eddie, and then one was Frasier and Lilith. And I think now, gosh, I'm second guessing myself. I think I remember reading or hearing at one point the creators of the show were trying to decide whether they wanted to make Lilith a regular star of the show or Eddie a regular guest on like the show. Like, it was between the two of them. And I think the decision was made prior to their decision to write Eddie out completely, but I don't know for certain about that. But one way or another, as much as I liked Jay Thomas in the role of Eddie LeBeck, and I liked his episodes with Carla, I think he was great for the time that we had. Like that is the easiest call in the world to make. You don't shortchange Lilith on this show. You like it's almost negligent that they waited until season 10 to actually put her in the opening credits and make her a regular. But yeah, she's so good.
I completely agree. Like you said, Jay Thomas he's great, but you just don't see him. I don't rank him the same way I rank Lilith as a character. You know, I can tell you about several episodes or little bits that Lilith did. I mean, you know, Earth Mother Lilith in this episode is just, she's a scream. Like I said, B.B. Newark, you know, is a treasure. She's just, I don't know where they found her, but I'm glad they, you know, like you said, it took them, you know, what, 10 seasons. She should have been made a regular by now, season seven.
Eddie was a great partner for Carla after, you know, I mean, comparing her previous husband, Nick, you know, Dan Hedaya was another treasure for the few times that we get him in the life of the show. But that was also one that probably too much of Nick might have been too much, period. Hence why the Tortellis maybe didn't last. Maybe one of the reasons why the Tortellis didn't last very long. But like the other thing about Jake Thomas or the character of Eddie, you can see him fitting in. You could see him sitting at the bar with the regulars and kind of becoming one of them. But I don't know that that would have really challenged the show or pushed it in any new directions. He was a good foil for Carla in their relationship, but I don't think he added much else, another dimension. Lilith is this incredible foil and partner for Frasier. But in the scenes she has with other characters like Rebecca, like Sam, like Carla, you just see like those are interactions that they couldn't have with other characters. It's new. It's exciting. It's different. And that just that extra dimension that a character like her brings to the world of Cheers. Again, you can't pass that up. You can't shorten that at all.
Well, Lilith, I think, lives on her own plane of reality. And, yeah. You know, and the contrast between her and the other characters besides Frasier, obviously, that's what makes it work, because she's almost like this alien, you know, to them. And they don't understand her. She doesn't understand them. But that makes for great comedy. You know, when you get the right actors who can make those differences and those contrasts work. And like I said, you know, B.B. Newworth has had so many great lines. I just love her droll. She's not intending to be funny. She just is funny because she's so kind of out of touch. Not out of touch, but like I said, she's in her own world.
Right, exactly, yeah. And the first time we see her in her limited role, she's this, you know, almost frosty, icy, almost so tightly wound and knotted and uptight that she's almost robotic. And then we see the little bit of the evolution of her. And the first time she's allowed to be sexy, it's this whole new effect on Frasier in particular, but the show in general. And then in this one, we see another like layer of the onion being peeled, or another dimension of the character. And we will get to that in a minute, but we'll take it in stride. So first up, we get this teaser that I love this too. This is one of those that I always forget about this one. And then once I see it, I'm like, why do I forget about this one? I love this one. The teaser, it's a small scene. We get this man coming in, a lawyer named Whitley Morris, who is played by the guest actor James Winkler, whose first appearance was actually in a televised broadcast of The Taming of the Shrew. And then only after that, only a handful of TV credits, but including actually he did appear on the show Frasier. I don't know for certain, but the fact that his first appearance was in that Taming of the Shrew, I bet he probably has a lot more stage experience than screen, as both actor and director.
Well, he's very good in this role. He's very droll and very matter of fact. And, you know, I love how Carla gets excited thinking she's going to be a millionaire. I mean, she blows off a patron like, hey, I'm talking here, you know, whatever.
Right. Yeah, like, he comes in as this lawyer named Whitley Morris. He's there to talk about her grandfather Antonio's will. And he tells this whole story about how Antonio abandoned Carla's grandmother back in 1921. He moved to Los Angeles. And Carla's like, okay, I've heard some of this before. But as he goes into the details, she's like, oh, I didn't know that before. She's like, he moved to Los Angeles. He started this fruit business. The fruit business took off. He amassed enough money to invest in oil. He made a small fortune that amassed tens of millions of dollars. $5. And she's like, well, what? And that's to the point where the customer is like, hey, miss, can I get a drink? She's like, what do I look like, a waitress? And she's ripping off her apron. And he's like, yeah. And then, you know, when on his deathbed, he felt bad that he abandoned your grandmother, the Loza Pony. So he left most of his money to that family. However, the will was suppressed by his illegitimate son Paolo, who squandered the fortune on fast horses and loose women. And Carlo's like, so what does this leave me? And he's like, your grandfather loves a pony's lucky quarter. And he took with him that sort of the business. And he gives her the quarter and walks right out the door, and that's it.
Well, you know, like a lot of the cold openings on Cheers, they just have nothing to do with the main storyline or plot. Mm-hmm. It's just like, you know, you almost want to say like it's like a throwaway gag, but many of them, like this one, are really funny, and they just put you in the right frame of mind. Then, you know, obviously we go to the credits and then we have the opening and where we establish the main plot. But Rhea Perlman, you know, she's always great as Carla. I mean, mm-hmm. she gets great lines, and her delivery of them, she's so nasty. But that's what makes her Carla.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A fun little vignette of just like somebody comes in promising that the character's entire fortune and status quo will be completely changed through the story, and by the story's end, nothing has changed. And they leave, and it's like, if that person never came through the door, would any part of Carla's life be changed? Well, she got a lucky quarter, maybe, but that's it, yeah.
Right. Carla has no luck.
One other note, the customer who asked her for a drink, that customer is played by Michael Holden. He actually kind of becomes one of the tertiary barflies, not quite as in as many episodes as some of the other guys, but this is his second appearance on the show. I'm not sure if I credited him the first time. But he actually, in later seasons, he's promoted, so to speak, by giving the name Joe, and he appears in 8 episodes total.
I like that term, tertiary barfly.
Yeah, that's kind of something I came up with, I think, in season 1. It was just some of the other guys that we see for like a season or two, but never quite make it further than that.
Yep.
After the opening credits, Rebecca comes out of the office a little bit mad. She's just like, she just had her butt chewed out by corporate. Sam makes a joke that the guy must have been a light eater or something like that. And she gives him a death glare. And she's like,
no, Kirstie Alley is just great at that. I mean, when you go back to like season 6, when she first started, the character seemed a little more reserved, you know, and I think it was probably because Kirstie Alley hadn't been known for really doing a lot of comedy prior to Cheers. But as the season unfolded, her character loosened up, and I think the producers realized that Kirstie Alley could handle a little more broader comedy than, you know, initially. Like I said, she was kind of an ice queen in the early episode. Right. And by now, she is just mixed in. I mean, were you watching Cheers back when it was first on, Ryan?
Oh yeah, especially this season. This was a season I remember these episodes vividly. But this is about the time that I was like locking in. Yeah.
The reason I'm saying that is because, you know, like when Shelley Long left the show at the end of season 5, there was a legitimate concern on the fact that producers and of course the people like us, the viewers, you know, was Kirstie Alley going to work? Was this going to be the end of Cheers? And it not only was it not the end of Cheers, it like began another era that lasted actually a season longer than, you know, Shelley Long. Mm-hmm. But yeah, she's, you know, Kirstie Alley really, by this point, she's part of the machine. She's a cog in a well-oiled machine, and she does her part. I like it when she's trying to convince Woody, and at one point she goes, you're on the verge of an emotional breakdown.
Yeah, that's so good, because she's coming out to reprimand Woody, because she's like, corporate is mad at you. Or like you're the reason they're mad at me or something, and he's like, okay, I'm sorry. He says, I was short $3.47 on my receipts last October. I took the money out of my own pocket, and I knew it would come back to bite me. I'm sorry. And he's like, yeah, almost on the verge of tears. Like, you don't have to say anything, Miss. I'll get my things and leave.
That was brilliant. You know, just Woody Harrelson just nailed it. Like he's convincing. Like he's convinced that this $3.40 kerfuffle is just going to end his career at Cheers.
That he paid back. He paid it back out of his own pocket.
Oh my God, it's just
she's like Woody, I don't know what you're talking about. That's not what this is. And he just like snaps out of like the tears, like, oh, never mind then. He's like, forget I said that. Like, if I, like, just pretend I never said that. So she's like, Woody, you haven't taken a vacation in 4 years. And he's like, that's true. I have a perfect attendance record. Like, it's school. He's like smiling full of pride. And she's like, well, you have to take one. It's mandatory. He's like, I don't want to take vacation. I like the people here. This is my, like, this is like my home. He's like, why should I leave? And this is where she kind of blows up. But at this point, yeah, we've seen neurotic Rebecca, so we know what she's capable of, even though she just kind of walks up to the edge. She's like almost grabbing him. She's like, the point is a happy workplace. The point is relieving stress. You're on the verge of emotional meltdown.
You realize as she's saying this, she's projecting onto him. Like,
absolutely, absolutely. And of course, he's feeling it now because of her, because he goes, well, now that you mention it, I am feeling a little bit on edge. It's just because she's been screaming in his face.
He's too emotional and naive to realize what's going on. You know, he just takes it all personally. Woody, oh my God. Yeah, it's one of those things, you know, when Woody Harrelson came on, you know, of course he was replacing Coach, and, you know, you wondered, would he work? And, you know, he found his own niche. I mean, he's kind of dimwitted, but in his own way.
Right, right. But then again, like, at times remarkably, I don't know how to say, like, savant-like, but like remarkably, like, level-headed, because my example is the next part of the episode, which is one of, like, this was almost my home run, but it is definitely one of my runners up, because Rebecca tells Woody, he's like, why don't you just go see your parents or something? And he's like, my folks were just here. And Norma's like, whoa, your parents were here in Boston? Why didn't you bring them by to meet us? And Woody goes, what, like, they ain't got nothing better to do?
Yeah, I mean, it comes from a guy who won't take a vacation because he loves working at Cheers.
Exactly. He's like, what, you think, like, my parents are in Boston, I'm going to bring them to a bar and just have them meet the regulars who sit there? And Norma's like, okay, good point. It's a little harsh, but yeah.
Well, Norm is very existential. He's very zen in a lot of ways, you know?
He is, yes, yeah. He has no delusions about his life.
No, he doesn't.
And then we actually get a funny little bit of continuity here, because Cliff starts talking about Expo when he went to Canada a couple of seasons ago. This was season 3, maybe? I'm trying to remember what it was. Maybe season 2 or 3.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's talking about when he went to Expo and like how much fun that was. He's like, you haven't lived until you've seen Bonanza dubbed into French Canadian.
A great, you know, you almost want to say throwaway line, but it gave, you know, Cliff something to say in the episode.
Frasier comes in and they kind of mention that they haven't seen Lilith in a while, since we found out in a few episodes ago that she's pregnant. And Frasier says that she's handling her pregnancy perfectly normal. You know, well, maybe she has one little hormonal change, but, you know, Lilith is so repressed normally that only her husband would notice the very subtle change. Enter Lilith, showing a little bit of a baby bump and like a glowing, and it's just saying, lay your hands upon me, everyone, for I am life.
When is Carla referred to as death with hips?
Death with hips, yeah, yeah.
And, you know, like her pregnancy hormones have transformed her. She's gone from being this cold, you know, almost, you know, tepid person to like Earth Mother.
Exactly. Yeah. She says things like, her man's seed is nourished within her. She walks right up to Sam, who's like, you know, like doing something from a table, and she's just like, touch my breasts, friend. I am lactating. Frasier rolling his eyes. Like, I love that. Like, there's no, like, even considering it's Sam and their past history, there's no hint of jealousy. No, like, Frasier is just like, oh my God, this woman. Like, there's nothing about this. And he trusts and knows Sam well enough at this point, because Sam just kind of looks at Lilith. He's like, you know, this is a first for me, but I'm going to pass.
Yeah, that was great, because, you know, Sam, well, you know, his history with women and lust and, you know, inappropriate behavior is legend.
Exactly, yeah.
But for him to turn it down, no, I'm good, thanks.
And she follows Carla down the bar. She calls Carla sister woman.
Oh, my God, yes.
And knowing Carla and how many kids she's had, like, why didn't you tell me about all of the glories of motherhood? And Carla, I was too busy puking or something like that.
Yes, yes. Which is what you'd expect from Carla.
Right. And She follows Carla into the back pool room and everything, and she's saying things like she's becoming a fountain of life. She says a moist, nourishing acre of loam from which shall spring the future of the human race. She says, my womb is the Tigris and the Euphrates. I am a slender tendril reaching back to the primordial ooze, as she follows Carla down the hallway. And everybody just looks back at Frasier. He's like, I'm planning on having her committed.
And he says it with such seriousness, you know, that yeah. it really sells it. Kelsey yeah. Grammer just does a great job. And she has another line where she goes, I shall suckle the earth itself. Yeah. Look, I mean, like I said, this is why I said at the beginning of our discussion, Bebe North is a treasure, because she just takes this material and she rolls with it.
Right, right. It's just, and just like, so such a transformative concept for Lilith, of all people. Yeah. Because she mentions she wants to plant the placenta in the backyard with the trees so she can become one with the planet and everything. And she's going on like this, and Frasier just blows up. He's like, for God's sake, woman. He's like, you're having a baby. Big deal. He says, a fly is a mother 1,000 times. You don't see her making an ass of herself in front of her husband's friends.
Yeah, he really lays into her. But, you know, you can see you can just see the tension building up within him. He's embarrassed. You know, he's with his the people who want to be his peers.
That's my favorite part. He's like, you're embarrassing me in front of people who would like to be my peers. And it cuts to Sam and Norman Cliff. They're like, should we be offended by that? I don't know.
Well, that's the great thing about it. That illustrates his point, you know. The thing about Frasier fitting in there has always been an interesting dynamic. But by now, you know, he's into the show for, what, 3 or 4 seasons?
Yeah.
He's firmly a part of that bar with all his eccentricities and stuffiness.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He would – I think I mentioned this on a previous episode. I'm sure he wouldn't want to admit it to anyone, least of all himself, like how dependent he is on these people. And for – camaraderie and just basic friendship, but I think he would be reluctant to admit, but would have to, that these are among his best friends and his closest confidants. And yet he still imagines himself so superior to them. But yeah,
well, even his relationship with Sam, you know, which you know obviously started off, they had Diane in common, and then there was that, you know, tension and push and pull. But you know, by now, like, he and Frasier have become friends. To the point where they have a mutual laugh over a great line a little later on down the line.
Oh, yeah. So,
I think you know what I'm talking about.
Yes, I do. I do. Yeah, we'll get to it. But yeah, and then this whole thing kind of like boils over because Lilith is talking about how, you know, he doesn't understand. Frasier says, you know, he wants to be just as excited in theory, or he feels like he is excited in theory, but for the man, it's a completely different experience. It's not something they can internalize, and it's not as biological as changing as it is for the woman. So, but Lilith is like, well, you know, I guess I'll suppress my emotions for him. And he's like, oh, you're the greatest, or just says something to that. He's like, that's my girl, or something like that.
Yeah.
But she walks out of the bar like kind of pretty angry, and he kind of chases her to like being apologetic. And there's like a nice little Norman Cliff thing where Norm's like, yeah, he's a dead man. And Cliff's like, put the tag on his toe and close the drawer. Yeah.
You got to love Norman Cliff. They're always there to offer like color commentary on the day.
And then we cut to a little bit later, Cliff comes in. He's got a box of chocolates that was given to him from his route, and he says, Norm, would you like one? And Norm is like, yeah, I really like the buttercreams, but these things are never labeled, so you don't know which one is which. So he takes a bite of one. He's like, ah, this is not the buttercream. Throws that one down, takes another one, bite. That's not the buttercream. He just keeps on going through all of the chocolates. Meanwhile, Frasier comes back in. He's feeling like crap for what he said to Lilith. And Norm's advice is like, whenever he and Vera say something that upsets them, they or the other, they just agree never to talk about it again. They suppress it, and that works like a charm. And Frasier's like, well, I don't really agree with that. If you go down that road of never talking about your feelings or what's upsetting you, at some point you're just not going to talk at all. And Norm's like, you're right. That's what works like a charm.
Yeah. And it's so Norm because, you know, as we've known, this is the 7th season. You know, he and I can't remember.
Vera.
Norm and Vera, you know, Vera's heard. She's barely, you know, in one episode she's sort of seen, but, you know – they have this relationship that's built on non-communication. You know, Norm spends the majority of his time at Cheers. I mean, I don't even know when he goes to work. But, it's just such a typical thing. It's a good reminder of, you know, him and Vera.
Yeah. Rebecca gives Woody his passport, but he is not excited for his trip to Italy. he mentions he's going to Florence and then Venice and then seeing the seven hills of something. And Rebecca has this little moment where, of course, she kind of gets lost in her own little thoughts. She remembers her trip to Italy, you know, backpacking and hitchhiking, having a wild fling with some guy that she doesn't even know his name, getting drunk on cheap wine, ripping off her clothes, and then... And she realizes that all the gang is like hanging on her every word. Like, yeah, what happened after you got naked? And he's like, oh, I changed for choir practice because I was there with my church group. And Sam just puts it right on the nose. Like, why couldn't I have known you back when you were cheap and slutty?
That was another line I focused in on because that's so Sam. But yeah, she's really getting wrapped up in her reverie of, you know, of this time she had in Italy. And then it like dawns on her, oh, crap.
And Woody has this wonderful little scene where he's confused. He's looking at the passport and he's confused about the U.S. customs rules and regulations regarding smuggling in foreign meats and not mutilating the passport. And just like this dialogue, he's like, what's wrong with foreign meat? And what's going to happen to me if I eat it if I spend a week eating it and everything? And he's like, what happens if some guy, like just before I come back through customs, some guy mutilates my passport and fills my suitcase full of meat?
Only Woody would come up with a scenario where somebody would purposely put foreign meat in his thing and mutilate his passport.
Yeah, it's just it's like some random act of violence that's so specific. And Rebecca's like, that's the chance that's the risk that every, you know, traveler takes. So.
Woody Harrelson just rolls with this material. He just, you know, like I said, he's carved out his own niche as, you know, the character of Woody. And he's just great to sort of have in these little in-between bits, in between, like, you know, the main plot line.
Well, Lilith comes back in. Frasier refers to Lilith and the unborn as Kanga and Little Rue. She doesn't want to go on about the pregnancy, but she does want him to hear something as a doctor, so she puts a stethoscope to her belly, and Frasier hears the heartbeat for the first time, and he shouts out, I am a giver of life, you know, completely taken to her side of the experience. She says, like, let's go lie on the roof naked and let the rain wash, like, cleanse us or something. And he's like, yes, we will be naked and unashamed. He's like, why should we be ashamed? Our child will never be ashamed, as they're walking out the door. And Carla's like, you want to bet? And it's loud enough that Frasier hears it and looks back through the door as it's closing.
Yeah. He's gone from being like annoyed by it and being a total skeptic to being totally like taken over by her. It's almost like, you know, Lilith is some kind of cult leader and now she's brainwashed Frasier. but he's, you know, he's so enraptured with the fact that, you know, his seed is growing within, you know, his woman, his Rue and her Kanga. But and you know, Kelsey Grammer just gets swept up in the mania as well. I mean, again, you know, this is why he and B.B. Newworth complement each other so well as Lilith and Frasier.
We see Woody learning new Italian phrases, kind of reciting a phrase in Italian. And they're like, wow, what does that mean? He's like, I have been hideously maimed in a train accident. Please shoot me.
You know, it just dawned on me one thing. For even though Sam, you know, is the lead character and Ted Danson is, you know, kind of like the lead star of the show, he doesn't have a lot to do in this episode.
You know? No, he doesn't. No, actually, that's. I think, like, to the show's credit, by this point, they know that the secondary characters are strong enough that they can carry, they can do more load lifting.
Yep.
And sometimes, I mean, there are episodes in this season where Rebecca is hardly in at all. Like, I think I counted one where she's only on screen for like less than 90 seconds and only has like a few sparse lines of dialogue. So yeah, there are definitely some of these episodes where the leads, titular leads, don't have much to do, but they're always great for, you know, their moments and their little beats that we'll give them. So then Frasier and Lilith come back wearing almost matching clothes that Lilith made herself. And it's like, Frasier's shirt is just sewn horribly. Like,
yes.
The buttons don't match. They're not at the right level. The front pocket is horribly uneven. There's like random bits of cloth holding the cuffs together. It's just like,
yeah, that's,
I mean, I couldn't do any better, so I'm not one to talk, but it's like, yikes.
Yeah, that's the first thing you notice. Like, she looks fine. She looks normal. Yes. He, on the other hand, looks like he's almost uncomfortable, and he probably is wearing that shirt. You know, who knows what kind of a fit it is in terms of, you know, what it's like. But yeah, that's just funny. They've almost become hippies.
Right. And that's the first little hint that they are about to announce this radical new shift in their lives and everything. Because Lilith says, we've been examining our lives and we've discovered some frightening things. And this is that moment that you refer to. Carla just walking right past them, doesn't miss a beat. She's like, you finally found Diane walled up in Fraser's crawl space.
And like, not only do they laugh, but Fraser and Sam just exchange a knowing look while they're laughing. And of course we know the history, so we're laughing too. You know, they're both able to laugh about it now. That's the great thing about it, you know?
That's why I say, like of all the things, I mean, like they had kind of a bond earlier on, but like the shared history of Diane and the horrible way they both feel about her, like the love, the hatred, the frustration, everything. Like there's something about that experience that just makes Fraser and Sam like war veterans. Like they just survived the same war together or something. And that will always be this link that they have. So yeah, that moment, the way they are able to look at each other and just crack up at that line is so good.
Well, even though Shelley Long has been gone, you know, almost 2 years at this point, year and a half, whatever, Diane's presence, you know, lingers.
Because they get so much mileage out of making fun of her every like 12 or like, the, you know, 24 episodes or something that can drop a joke on that. And just, it's funny. So,
well, then in season 6, very early on, they said, what happened to Diane? She left to write a book. I hear she's writing for TV now.
Yeah, just making fun of her. Yeah, yeah.
But it was, yeah, that was great. I love, like I said, I just love seeing those two characters bond. And it's just great to see that after all these years, they've got that tight bond. And yet, like you said, it's like, you know, war veterans.
So Fraser and Lilith, they've decided to forego civilization and live out in the woods. They're going to get back to nature. And Sam warns them that, you know, throwing everything away could end up being a big regret. And as he's about to, Norma's like, Sam, you're not going to tell that long, boring story about how you sold the bar and bought a boat to sail around the world and then the boat sank, are you? It's like, you just see something inside of Sam dies. It's like, it's just,
yeah.
He's like, no, Norm, I am perfectly aware of how that turning point in my life means nothing to you people. He's like, so I'm going to tell the story of a friend of mine who bought a truck to drive around the world.
Ted Danson conveys his disappointment. Like you said, it's like something died inside of him. He just conveys that. With this dialogue, but like a good actor, you can see it in their face. Before he even says the line, you know what he's feeling.
Lilith, Fraser and Lilith, you know, they confess that they've already quit their jobs. You know, they put their house on the market. And Sam asks if they've ever even lived outside of the city. And Lilith says, you know, I admit we're both urbanites, but we've always enjoyed the city when we've flown over it. We've always enjoyed the country when we've flown over it. So Sam suggests that they test this out by trying it for 1 week, and he says that he's got a friend with a cabin out in northern Maine. And Norm's like, he didn't take it out for around the world, did he? It's like being, staying on that joke.
Yep.
So, yeah, Fraser and Lilith, they're like, okay, we agree. We'll try this cabin out for a week and to see how it works and everything. And Fraser's like, well, yeah, hey, if we're not leaving right now, I can get back I can make my 3 o'clock class, which is a paranoia workshop. And she's like, you already canceled that. He's like, well, I'll just deny canceling it and tell them it was a conspiracy.
Great line. Frasier, for such a man who you know, cares about the human condition, you know, oh, I'll just tell him it was, you know, I'll just deny it.
We cut to the aforementioned cabin that they have, and note that this one aired in March. You know, we're in the Northeast, so it's still the dead of winter. So they come in, they're cold, they're like freezing or whatever, like shivering and everything. And Fraser reaches up, he takes the one light bulb that is hanging in the cabin, unscrews it, and just like yeets it out into the woods or something behind them. And they're like, this feels good. Let's celebrate the coldness. Okay, let's get warm. Let's celebrate warmth and everything like that. So Frasier is going to start the fire, but he's like, you didn't bring the matches. Lilith is like, I thought you were going to bring the matches. He's like, you mean you forgot to bring them? She's like, no, you forgot to bring them. They're kind of like joking about this. So he makes a joke about like slitting open a moose and they can sleep inside of it for warmth. And he thinks it's kind of funny, but she's just staring at him like, and the unspoken thing is, I'm still cold. You're not doing your job of warming me up. So Frasier tries to start a fire by striking two rocks together to make a spark. You can imagine this is not going well, but Lilith mocks him about that, and they start to snipe at each other, and they kind of dissolve, you know, that tension pretty quickly, and Frasier asks her to sing something for him, and she's like, well, I only know one song, and she starts to sing My Funny Valentine. Yes. It's like this old Rogers and Hart jazz standard.
And what was funny is that he asked her to sing an old-fashioned work song. Which, My Funny Valentine, I don't know a lot about work songs, but I have a strong feeling that My Funny Valentine is not one of them.
It's not. She's like, I don't know any work song, but I know this one. Now, we have heard them sing Our House, but like in a season 5 episode. So we know that she does know some other songs. And then we'll actually hear Lilith sing another song or a couple songs later on in the series. And B.B. Newirth is an accomplished, you know, performer of stage musicals and everything. She's got a great voice. She can sing. But the whole thing is here, she is singing this song in such a droll manner that it just becomes dark and depressing as Frasier is striking these rocks trying to start a fire.
Again, you know, she's just underscoring his frustration by singing this song that's really eventually ends up driving him nuts. And, you know, drives him kind of mad, but he's trying. Oh, I think I saw a spark. Yeah. And you know, the slightest spark. And like he's excited. Quick, get some paper. Wad it up. That way.
In the middle of her song, we temporarily cut away from the cranes to go back to the bar. And now of everything in this episode, including like the scenes where they're in this cabin, this scene when we go back to the bar is like the part of this episode that I've always remembered. Because Woody comes back from his vacation. He is all excited and everything. He's talking about the great time that he had for the last week. And they're like, how was it? And he's like, well, actually, I never made it to Italy. I fell asleep and missed the flight. And Carla just puts her hands out to Norman Cliff. She's like, pay up, everybody. Yeah. And she was like, this was obviously a bet that she was making. She's like, of course he's not going to make it to his flight. But Woody said he spent the entire week at the airport. And he's like, you know, at first I felt bad. He says, but then I met this nice guy from India. And he's like, can you imagine? I'm from Indiana and he's from India. And he's just like, we laughed about that for hours. He's like laughing to himself. And then he kind of slows down. He's like, at least I think that's what he was laughing at. It's like that part crushes me. That line. So
I have to say that this part of the episode, like even for Woody, that's like, I don't know. I guess it didn't resonate with me the same way it did with you. Not that it's not bad. It's just kind of like he spent a whole week at the airport.
And again, maybe it's like a little bit of nostalgia because that's like I said, that's the part of this episode. I always were just the concept of somebody going to the airport, missing your flight, and then just not going home or not rescheduling, but just staying there and like just talking to new people. And that's how you spend your week. It's almost like getting a worldly travel experience without actually going anywhere, but just from encounters with other people. But yeah, and then here's where Rebecca, she kind of mentions, well, I didn't think you'd be back today. I thought you'd need an extra day to rest, so I didn't schedule you till tomorrow. And Woody's like, that's great. I'm out of here. He grabs his bags. Yeah. He starts to bolt for the door. And they're like, where are you going? He's like, I hear great things about the bus depot.
Yeah, all right. That was good. I like that. He's got one more day. He's not going to waste it.
Yeah. And then back at the cabin, Lilith is still singing. She's still singing that song. And it's just gotten worse and worse. And Frasier's just, shut up. And then he hits his thumb on the rock and it's like, he freaks out about it. He thinks he's going to lose the nail. And he's like, oh, where's like the med kit? Like, we don't have a med kit. And then he tries one more time and he gets this spark and everything and he feels great. And he's like, yeah, wad up the newspaper. And then as she's giving him the newspaper, she's kind of just reading along. She's like, oh, there's a restaurant review for, you know, this Boston restaurant that they used to go to. And they kind of like mock it for how, you know, posh and how decadent it is and the immorality of, you know, eating, you know, food that you didn't prepare yourself and everything like that. But the food was good, now that I think about it. Frasier says the creme brulee was a poem.
Yeah, they're getting seduced by their memories of this great restaurant, and you can almost see where it's going.
Yeah, and he's like, but no, you know, we'll still do this. And he's still trying to cook make the fire. And Willow's like, I can cook you a good American meal of lentils and okra over an open flame. And then finally, he kind of like stops, and they're both thinking the same thing. And it's like, well, it's no danger if we both say it together at the same time. And they both say, I want to go home. And he's like, all right, great. If we leave now, maybe we can make Laporta's like dinner seating. I was like, no, we don't have time. Like, then we'll charter a plane. That's the beauty of civilization. You can buy anything.
You can buy anything you want, yeah. Frasier and Lil can go from elation to driving each other crazy to back to let's go home. And, you know, let's see if we can get a booking at that restaurant tonight.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, how long did their, you know, adventure in the wild last? What, 10 minutes maybe?
Right, yeah. Yeah, it's the thing, because, like, I kind of think about this episode as, yeah, the one where they go to the cabin, but they're not there for a lot of screen time. It's like, yeah, they basically try one thing, try to build a fire, and maybe it seems a little bit longer because it's broken up by the Woody scene in between, but they're only there for a couple minutes, and it's like, they quickly abandon this thing. Like, that actually, like, kind of punctuates how they are not meant for this type of living. And they're like, yeah, we were in that cabin for maybe 10 minutes before we're like, yeah, this isn't for us.
I mean, you could argue that, you know, it was elapsed time and we're just seeing little fragments of it. You know, it could have taken an entire afternoon, but at most they were there for like an hour or two.
Right.
Because it's still light out when they arrive, it's light out. And when they leave, it's light out.
Right. And if they're planning like at least a 4 or 5 hour drive back to Boston or something in time for dinner or something like that, then, yeah. They're saying, well, we'll just charter a plane.
Yeah, he says it so matter-of-factly.
Yeah, of course. For Norm's tab for this episode, he had 4 beers, which brings him up to 654 for the series so far.
I love how you keep track of that stuff.
I don't remember what the impetus was, but I've been doing it, so. And the employee of the week, for me, this was pretty obvious. I mean, Frasier was awesome in this one too. He was a great, backup, but like so much of this one was, for me, it was Lilith, because we get the mother stuff and the way she delivers those sappy lines about this Earth mother thing and how crazy she sounds compared to like the previous versions of the character. That whole thing, we get an example of her singing. Even the bit like when they first go into the cabin, when she's shivering, like she's doing a good job, like the physical acting of just looking like she's really cold and like looking natural about it. I thought that was a great bit of physical acting that was like subtle, but looked realistic. So yeah, I thought this one, she was a great lead or great employee of the week for this one. What about you?
I have to concur. I mean, I probably tipped my hat at the beginning of the episode where I said that BB Newirth is a treasure, but you know, she's delivering lines as, you know, mother to be Lilith, that if the previous version of Lilith had heard her saying this, she would have thought she was a crazy person.
Yeah.
She would have had some very interesting comments about her, you know.
Right.
And BB Newirth just embraces the madness and the craziness, because in her mind, she's at one with this, you know, experience of, you know, bearing a child, and she even gets Frasier swept up in it. She really helps this episode move along, and she just, you know, this is a reason why making her recurring character or a regular character was a really good move for this show. And you know 2 years out of the Diane era, you know, the show is still going strong.
Yes, it absolutely is. Now, despite the fact that she is, my far and away employee of the week, I have my home run line and I have 2 runners up that I wrote down in my notes, and Lilith doesn't give any of those lines. So I'll give my favorite one first, and then I'll do the runners up after you do yours. But okay, for me, like, it's it's the line that I always remember. It's when Woody's like, can you believe I'm from Indiana and he's from India? We laughed about that for hours. And then he takes a beat. He's like, at least I think that's what he was laughing at.
My favorite line of the episode is when it's, I think it's after like the Lilith has her initial burst of, you know, Earth Mother, and then, you know, she leaves and Fraser comes back to the bar the next day and Carla says, "Hey, Fraser, what's the latest with Madame Overy?" That's, you know, with all the great lines that, you know, Fraser and Lilith had, that line just, that, you know, Madame Bovary, you know, it's like.
Right, oh, Madame Overy. Yeah.
I don't really have like any runner. I didn't think to do runners up, but just about any, you know, maybe I'll say that line where I'll bury your young and I'll cook your meals. And, you know, Carla saying, you know, don't get the two mixed up.
Good. Yeah. Well, for my runners up, the first runner up was when Carla's like, when she mentions that you found Diane walled up in Fraser's crawl space. That was good. And then when Woody mentions that his parents were just in Boston, Norm's like, "Why didn't you bring them here to meet us?" He's like they don't have anything better to do?
It's funny how Woody has progressed as a character. You know, he probably wouldn't have said something like that early on.
Right, right.
But he feels comfortable enough, you know, with these guys and in this environment where he can occasionally just let off a one-liner and at their expense.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, and that was Crane Makers. So, Chris, thank you very much for helping me cover this one. This was fun. Where else can our listeners find you if they want to hear more from you?
Well, I'm on Facebook under my name, Chris Karam, which is K-R-A-M. I do have my podcast, Mr. K's Super Show, which usually me and a guest discuss, you know, some classic rock or pop from the 60s, 70s, or 80s. And, Ryan, I need to have you on sometime. And I also do another podcast that's on the Mr. K Super Show feed. It's a comic book podcast that we started last year. It's called Back Issue Banter. I do that with my friend Brad Page, and we discuss classic comics, you know, Marvel and DC from like the 60s, 70s, and the 80s. And we're just a couple of old guys discussing stuff we love. And those are, you can find those podcasts on the Mr. K Super Show feed. It's on Podomatic. It's on Apple Podcasts, you know, any fine podcatcher of choice.
Cool. Very cool. Very cool. Thanks again, Chris, for being on this episode. And thanks to all of you out there who listen to Cheers Cast and support the show by liking and sharing on social media and leaving comments on the website fireandwaterpodcast.com. You can also support the Fire and Water Podcast Network on Patreon. Cheers Cast is supported by the Right On Network and Jeff and Rick Presents Unpacking the Power of Power Pack. Go to patreon.com/FW Podcast to support your favorite show on the Fire and Water Network. Thanks everyone for listening, and until next time, we're closed.
Oh, Carla, sister woman. Why didn't you ever share with me the religious wonder of this experience when you were great with child?
I was too busy puking.
A small price to pay for becoming a fountain of life. A moist, nourishing acre of loam from which shall spring the future of the human race.
Speaking of puking, would you excuse me for a minute?
I am a cradle of life. My womb is the Tigris and the Euphrates. I am a slender tendril reaching back to the primordial ooze.
I'm planning on having her committed.
It's been a very difficult decision for you.
Oddly enough, no.